I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anelio, and you're listening to The Functional Nerds, probably episode number 199, if I'm counting correctly.
I think you are, yeah.
And John?
Yeah. Yes.
Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday to you too, Patrick. I'm Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude. You can check out his website, atfmb.com. You can follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anelio. I'm a songwriter and a composer. You can check out my music over at johnanelio.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at johnanelio. And let's introduce our guest before we get started. It is A.M. Delamonica, or Alex Delamonica, and she's a Clarion West graduate and teaches writing through the UCLA Extension Writers Program. Her first novel, Indigo Springs, won the Sunburst Award for Canadian Literature of the Fantastic. Her most recent book, Child of a Hidden Sea, was released by Tor this past June. Her website is Alex Delamonica, and that's Alex with a Y, A-L-Y-X, Delamonica.com. And you can follow her on Twitter at Alex Delamonica. Alex, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, guys. So nice to be here.
Great.
Welcome. Thanks for sending the check.
And I was going to tell Patrick, you know, happy Saturday. So Saturday's become a very happy thing for me, because I don't think I was telling you this, Patrick, but I started doing this slow carb diet, which the slow carb diet is basically you don't eat any bread, pasta, rice, potatoes. I have that book here too, Patrick. He likes to distract it. You can't fruit. It's pretty restrictive. You basically eat meat, vegetables, and a lot of beans, which my wife is thrilled about my bean consumption these days.
Oh, John, there was a story. It was on Facebook. There was a study done in England. And basically the study says, if you smell farts, that means that you are a healthy person, because unhealthy people can't smell the farts.
Oh, well, then my wife is really healthy, because she's been smelling a lot of that lately. But anyway, so the whole point of this diet is, so then on Saturday, then so it's 6 days on, and then Saturday you do whatever you want. So I eat today pancakes and just everything that I don't eat during the week. So I've been doing that for like 3 weeks. So Saturday has become a very happy day around here for me.
And by the way, I tried to convince Michelle that the validity of that article and the fact that if you can smell farts, you are healthy, and that I wanted her to really, you know, I want to make sure she's healthy. That did not go over at all.
Yeah, no, I don't understand why. But so now that we've totally disgusted our guest by having a good 5 minutes of fart talk to start off. Your book's getting a lot of great reviews. Obviously, I got it sent to me through Tor. Tor is very nice and sends us these beautiful books.
They never used to send them to me, and now all of a sudden they're sending them to me, because I think it's because some of them are listening to us, so they're sending them.
Yeah,
to me.
And I put a little word in for you with.
Oh, did you?
Alex is a. One of Alex's publicists is Artie Osplach, so she I said, oh, start sending Patrick some books too. So I think she's sending you some books. She's tours. So
yeah.
So she's great. I just saw her actually. I was at the tour.com 6th anniversary meetup this past Wednesday. I went with Rob Bedford, and those are great. They do them once a summer to celebrate their anniversary, and Artie was there and a lot of other tour people, but a lot of other people in genre publishing that kind of live in the New York area here. And it was great. I got a lot of good conversations. Talked to Ellen Datlow for a while. Really, really cool kind of hangout and really, really good time. But
now here's a question for Alex. I have looked at the cover of Child of a Hidden Sea here. So this is obviously a sailing ship. And you have, you know, the lady standing there in the very swashbuckling pose, you know, holding the ropes and stuff. And then you got the guy standing there. I have looked at this 100 times. This is the first time I've noticed that he has a cat on his shoulder.
That is actually not a cat.
It looks like a cat, though.
It is a ferret who has been made into a chimera with a snake. So it's a ferret with a snake's tail. When we were discussing the cover concept, they had the sailing ship, and they didn't have the magical text on the sail yet, and they said, this looks adventure-y, and it looks almost right, but there's nothing that says magic, so, you know, what have you got? And I said, well, there's the race of cats is actually cursed on the world that this takes place in, so it's really quite hard to get a ship's cat. But this guy, the ship's captain, Harish, likes to rescue animals who've been experimented on by magicians. So he's got this ship's ferret. Because it's on his shoulder, you can't actually see that they are one creature.
Right, that's why I thought it was two. I thought he had a cat on one shoulder and a snake on the other.
Yeah, exactly. So that's perhaps a slight conceptual fail there, but it does look like a very cat-like ferret.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Still very cool.
Yeah, it is totally cool. I love the art for this book. You were saying Artie sends me beautiful books. I was like, mine's the most beautiful.
Well, there is, talking about this, spoke to a couple of author friends of mine this Wednesday at that horror event, and there certainly is the cover lottery. You know, mm-hmm. sometimes you win the cover lottery, sometimes you don't, and the couple authors I were talking to had some really beautiful art. They had more of the sort of the photo realistic kind of art, which I don't know a lot about how that stuff happens. I don't know if it's they actually take photos and then it's sort of enhanced via Photoshop.
The Hildebrandt brothers did.
My Blue Magic cover they used a few photographs and photoshopped them together. There were a few versions that I got to see. So Blue Magic has sort of the bottom half of a woman on it, but there was one version which had all of her. Mm-hmm. And it was much more obviously a photo then.
And if you look out there, John, like the Hildebrandts, a lot of times would show you the before pictures where they would actually mm-hmm. dress up and they would use towels to create, you know, cloaks mm-hmm. and hoods and all this kind of stuff. And they'd have a mop stick as a staff. Mm-hmm. And when they would do like the Lord of the Rings stuff, and they mm-hmm. would pose and take pictures and then use those as the basis for creating the actual art.
Yeah, I remember way back in the early days of the podcast when we had John Picasso on.
Yeah, he does a hybrid. He does a little bit of both. And he actually incorporates the pictures in it.
Yeah, he does like a lot of layers and things mm-hmm. like that. John's probably too big to get on the show now because he's won like three Hugos.
We should get Galen Dara on.
Yeah, we got to get all our artist friends back on. We haven't had a nice artist on in a while. But cool. Well, no, but your cover is awesome too, which is not a photo cover. It's a complete, you know, more traditional kind of art, but it's fantastic.
And I
know
who's the artist?
It's almost a throwback in a good way. Yeah. It very much harkens back to sort of older types of adventure-y covers. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, who's the artist that did it? What's the name? I'll put you on the spot. Okay.
I didn't know there'd be a quiz, and I'm terrible at remembering names.
And see, this is my annoyance a lot of times, because I open up the book and I'm looking, and number one, it doesn't tell me who the editor is, and number two, it doesn't tell me who the cover artist is. So,
yeah, you think that would be like
that?
That
always annoys me.
Well, if you spin on to another question, I will find it out, because I know.
We'll get that in there. Well, I was thinking maybe that seems like a nice.
Oh, sure. You're gonna try to transition into picks already.
I am.
Why she's
am.
Looking for that? Seriously, John? Seriously?
Well, we can wait a minute.
You seriously?
I can Google and talk about cover art. The artist's name is actually Carla Ortiz.
Ooh,
Carla Ortiz. Good. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm unfamiliar with her, but that's great. That's great.
She has quite a cool blog. It's worth surfing over there sometime and having a look.
Carla. I'm sorry, go back.
No, Alex, who is your editor?
Stacey Hill.
Thank you.
Mm. Great. Well, we're definitely artist nerds and map nerds here. So we always Patrick always talks about how he wishes it was easier to go about getting cover art and maps and things like that, so you can buy it as like
I would cover my house in it. I would cover mm-hmm. it head to toe in it if I could. John, you've seen my wall here in the super secret lair of the Functional Nerds. I would cover my entire freaking house. I would wallpaper the house with it if they would sell it to me.
Yeah.
And especially now in the age where you can take an image and print it on canvas.
Yes.
You can get some really neat effects.
Yes.
Definitely, definitely.
Now you can go on to Picks of the Week, John.
All right.
Picks of the Week.
The thing I thought I would pitch or plug or go, woo, I love this, is a show called Penny Dreadful. I've only seen 6 episodes so far out of the 8 for the first season, but it is yet another of those somewhat steampunky attempt to do the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen thing. So Mina Harker from Dracula is in it. Victor Frankenstein and his creation is in it. Who else is in it? As characters, obviously. And there's a woman named Eva Green who plays a psychic who was a friend of Mina Harker's. And the main thrust of the story is that she and Mina's father are trying to get her back from Dracula. And they don't really understand how compromised she might be in terms of how vampire-y she has become.
Now, I saw part of that episode with Eva Green, or part of one episode with Eva Green. And I like her. She was in the first Bond reboot. She has been in a lot of stuff since then. She was in that really horrible, crappy Dark Shadows reboot. But she, I really liked her.
She's got a cheekbone for goth.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. She's incredible in this. She gets to do all sorts of kind of fun things. She gets to play an ice queenie. She gets to be kind of warm. Dorian Gray, that's another one of the characters who's in it. And she gets to be possessed at certain points. So, you know, then you get a very different kind of personality from her. It's an amazing performance.
And that's the episode I think I saw part of.
Right.
She was possessed. Now, this is in this country, that's on Showtime. What country is it, or what channel is it on in Canada?
You know, I actually downloaded it from iTunes, maybe?
Okay.
I'm not sure. We have Showtime here as well. I'm one of those people who kind of puts their TV viewing together from bits and pieces of not having cable.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, because I was going to say, because that almost sounded like a BBC show. I wasn't sure where it originated from, but I guess it's Showtime.
It's got that premium TV writing feel, but...
Yeah. Cool, great. So that is Penny Dreadful. And Patrick, what is your pick this week?
And I just want to throw it out there, John. I've seen a lot of people on Twitter and Facebook talking about Penny Dreadful. So
yeah, me
too.
So
it's definitely within our community. It's becoming something that people, it's got a lot of buzz about it. Very interesting stuff. That's why one night I came home and it was super late, but I was wired enough that I didn't want to go to sleep. The way my brain works sometimes, that just happens. And I turned on the TV and that happened to be what was on. And I caught like the tail end of that episode where she was possessed. And it just looked really, really cool.
Cool.
My pick is, we've kind of talked about it, but we haven't really talked about it in a long time. But I've maybe a year and a half now, I've had a really hard time reading. I get annoyed because I think it's because for a long time I was getting mostly the books sent to me were mostly the straight to paperback, churn them out kind of books. And you start reading those and you're going, really? This is what you're publishing. Seriously. This is it. You're saying no to my book and you're publishing this crap. Okay. So I've been having a really hard time, and now with the new job and everything and going down to Colorado Springs as much as I've been doing, I just haven't had time to read. So I finally bit the bullet and I signed up for Audible. And I signed up for Audible because Jim Butcher's Skin Game came out, and in a month's time, I've read all of 2 chapters.
Okay.
Where normally I would have had the entire book read in the first weekend.
Right.
Of his, because I just love the Dresden Files. So I went ahead, I bit the bullet, I signed up for Audible, I got my credit, I downloaded Skin Game, I put the app on my phone, I've got the little thing in my car that connects it to the stereo over the FM transmitter, and driving back and forth between here and Colorado Springs, which is about an hour and a half drive to get where I need to go, I've been listening to James Marsters, Spike from Buffy, narrate Skin Game. And it's awesome. And I'm sure that the people who are driving down the road, down I-25 next to me, and they pass me seeing this guy just laughing his ass off as he's driving, it's all James Marsters' fault. All his fault. But it's awesome. I love it. Cool. I want to get all of them that he's narrated, because apparently he's narrated like 14 of them, 14 out of the 15.
Yeah. Well, you know what, too, and I would recommend, too, and it's only on certain titles. It's not on everything, but what
it has
I've
the
used...
Whisper Sync.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I mean, because I prefer to just actually read on my iPhone or an iPad or something. But when you can do that thing where it links up between your devices, and I did that for the first Brandon Sanderson book, which, you know, was 1,000 pages. So being able to read it, then listen in the car, then have it pick up and you read it again during your lunch hour or whatever, that's it's great. And a lot of times you get a pretty good discount on one if you bought the other. So if you bought the audiobook if you bought the ebook, a lot of times the audiobook will be discounted and it'll be like, you know, maybe $4 or $5 or something. So especially for those big long books, it's great.
Here's the problem, John. The WhisperSync isn't actually working for me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I pick up the hardcover and nothing happens. It doesn't automatically flip to the page that I left it on in the car. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if there's a disconnect there. I don't know if the Amazon drones aren't working. I don't know if it's like it was part of the negotiations with Hachette or somebody that they can't do the WhisperSync.
Take the phone and put it on the book.
Just like rub it in hard.
For like 3 seconds and then pull it away.
John, I do appreciate ebooks. I love them. I love to read on my Kindle. However, there are certain books that the collector in me has to purchase the hardcovers of.
Oh, I got you.
And well, a lot of times Dresden I'll do Files all three. Is one of those.
I'll do that sometimes too, where I'll have the hardcover. Maybe if I already bought the ebook, sometimes I'll take the hardcover out of the library while I'm reading it and like read a couple pages there. So there are times where I have hardcover, ebook, audiobook all going at the same time, you know. So it's great. Cool. Well, my pick this week.
Before you do that, John, I just want to say, I want to warn people, starting at chapter 29 through about chapter 32. Jim Butcher kicks you in the emotional nads.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know. I think I've heard that. I feel like other people have mentioned those chapters online somewhere too. All right. My pick this week is, I've been reading it. I'm on volume 2 of the graphic novel of it. It is Why the Last Man by Brian K. Vaughan is the writer and Pia Guerra is the artist on this. And as you know, I haven't read a lot of comics graphic novels lately, but I really like Saga a lot. And this is what Brian K. Vaughan wrote before Saga. And this is fantastic. Have you read this, Patrick? Have you read Why the Last Man?
No, but Patterson keeps telling me I need to.
Oh, it's great. So I'm on volume 2 right now, and there's like 10 volumes.
Basically, I'm freaking out. You need to stop showing me that in the video because the top left or right hand corner is curled up. You have not taken appropriate care of your graphic novel.
It's from the library, Patrick. So that's why. But it's great. The premise is a plague hits that wipes out every mammal with a Y chromosome. So all men are gone except for one and his pet monkey. So it's one man and his pet monkey.
Is that a metaphor?
I don't know. But it's basically what would happen. So the book's supposed to take place in 2002, and it's what would happen if half the population suddenly died, except for one man. And it's I thought it was just such a cool concept for a graphic novel, and being about halfway through volume 2, it's excellent. I can't recommend it.
I can tell you right now, if all the men in the world died tomorrow, what would happen to the rest of us? So number one, women would feel comfortable walking down the street past construction sites.
Mm.
They wouldn't have any issues at conventions, right?
Mm. Mm-hmm. Right. It's so true though. They're doing a lot of work in our apartment complex, and my wife is like, oh, I don't feel like going outside to get she'll be like, I got to get something for the car, and I'll be like, I'll go get it, because I know it's just like the guys don't say anything, they just like look, and it's horrible. Like I know my wife has been feeling that the last couple of weeks while these guys have been doing work around here. But anyway, but no, cool book. It's I really dig it. It's definitely worth checking out.
So
but,
Alex is bored. We got to engage her now.
Yeah, let's get back into some topics. So, Alex, your book that The Child of a Hidden Sea, which just came out, it's referred to as portal fantasy. Now, portal fantasy is a term that I've only been recently aware of, but I've read a lot of portal fantasy after people have described it to me. And I was actually hanging out with Rob Bedford this past Wednesday. He was the one that drove me into this event. And I was describing another book. I was describing Ed Lazzalieri's book. And he was like, you like portal fantasy, don't you? And I'm like, yeah, I guess I do. And so can you describe what portal fantasy is and why your book could be considered portal fantasy?
I had actually written this book about halfway done before I'd heard the term. But it's essentially the kind of book where someone from our world, and it's usually someone from the author's own time and place, goes to a second magical world. So it's Narnia. You go through a wardrobe and you're in Narnia. It's Oz. You get picked up by tornado and you end up in another world, but somehow the real world is still accessible to you in a limited way, and some characters at least can travel between them. Usually Portal Fantasies have children as heroes. Mm-hmm. Mine does not. Sophie is 24 years old and sort of dithering about finishing her master's thesis. Usually they end up sort of being lost princes or princesses as they are in the Narnia world, or somehow really key to the political structure of the world, or they at least fall in with the movers and shakers of that world and have an opportunity to change things, which they generally don't have in their own world. The other world is almost always magical. Because otherwise, how do you get the portal?
So now, when you started writing this story, did you know from the get-go that it was going to be Portal Fantasy?
Yeah, it was one of the first things I decided. My first two books were a lot of fun to write, and I'm very proud of them. But Indigo Springs and Blue Magic, among other things, have a really high body count. And as it happened, just because the family I'm married into has a lot of older folks, I was going to a lot of funerals at the time. So life seemed kind of a little blue, a little sort of downbeat. And I thought, the next books are going to be fun. They're going to be fun. So I sat down and made a list of everything that I think is fun. And Portal Fantasy was really high on the list. For some reason, I've just always been enchanted by that idea of you slip through a door and you're somewhere else. Portals creep into worlds that I've created where they really almost have no business being, and then I have to shoehorn the entire story around making that make sense. That was true of Indigo Springs and Blue Magic too. One of the problems there was that a magical toxic spill had basically gotten stuck into what used to be fairyland, and it was leaking back into Earth or into our world.
Now you mentioned the magic that you use in the book. Now, can you give us a little bit of without any kind of spoilers, but can you give us a little bit of listeners a little bit of what your magic system is based on?
So the world in this case is called Stormrack, and they refer to our world as Erstwhile. And the form of magic is a combination of script writing, like scroll writing, and contract law called inscription. So there are 250 nations on Stormrack. This is terribly simple. I'll have you know up front. There are 250 island nations on Stormrack, and they each have a slightly different microclimate. They're a little like the Galapagos Islands. And the animals and plants that you have on your island determine what kind of spells you can write. So you take a scroll, which might actually be parchment and roll, or it might be a piece of rhinoceros hide, or it might actually be a big cuneiform clay, but it has to be perfect. And you write out the script of your intention, whatever magical change to the laws of physics you want to enact, in a magical alphabet. And we were talking a little about my cover, the writing on the ship's sails is this alphabet. The words have to be perfect, and the materials are very specific. So, you know, one culture might use cuneiform with a clay style or a stylus for the clay that's made out of a specific wood from a specific tree, and no other island might have this tree, and they wouldn't be able to write that specific spell. There's an island on Stormrack called Arrant, for example, that has a fairly dangerous volcano. It's like Mount Etna. It just every now and then erupts and wipes out the capital city and a good chunk of the population. So quite a few hundred years ago, they brought in a master builder to create a huge statue, and they wrote a spell on it, and she calms the volcano. So they've had a tame volcano ever since. The other thing about inscription is if the scroll is destroyed, in whatever form it takes, the spell hurts. So if that statue on Arrant ever goes, the island is going to suffer a cataclysmic volcanic explosion. If you are so foolish as to use inscription to say abort a pregnancy and that scroll is destroyed in your lifetime, you might end up pregnant again, or you might suddenly end up with a 20-year-old child whom you've never met.
Interesting. Wow. Good. Patrick, you had a question there?
I was just happy that she clarified script writing and her definition of it, because we all know there's no magic coming out of, you know, the script writers in Hollywood, so.
A little harsh.
Sharknado! Sharknado!
We're going to talk about that with our next guest, actually. So, you know, when I was looking up a couple things about you online, you know, you in one of the interviews that I came across, you had mentioned that in some of the teaching that you do when you're teaching people who are trying to learn how to become writers,
right.
You mentioned that a lot of the writers that you teach are actually lawyers that are looking to, you know, sort of have a change of career. And you were saying how lawyers typically love language. They love, like, sort of double meanings of words. And so, you know, maybe you could tell us a little bit about that and about how that can kind of work with magic, because obviously all the words in magic are important.
I have a couple friends who are lawyers. I aspire to write crime fiction, so I cultivate crown attorneys and defense lawyers. And I, for a very short time, a number of years ago, I worked at a rape crisis center, so I occasionally met lawyers and cops through that work as well. And all the ones I've ever been close to, they're finicky about language. You know, any little thing you say, they'll parse it out and take it literally. And this is the nature of the job, right? It's to look at a piece of text and say, this is exactly what it means, and this is exactly what actions we have to take in the real world as a result of this signed document. Or, you know, this law, this is what it means to obey it. What I found, especially when I first started teaching at the UCLA Writers Extension Program, was I always had a number of students who were lawyers taking a break from their work, or lawyers on maternity leave, or just dissatisfied lawyers who were taking that love of language and looking to see if they could turn it into fiction as well.
Yeah. Now, next question I want to ask is with the Storm Rack universe that you have, you had a couple of prequel short stories that were up on Tor.com, and I'm seeing this more and more where writers are kind of writing short stories and novellas and that kind of thing within the universe that they created. So was that something that was your idea that you wanted to explore? Did Tor want you to try to come up with some supplementary material? How did that come about?
Well, as your listeners probably know, publishing can move quite slowly sometimes. And I had written a proposal for these three books that I wanted to write, that I put every fun thing I like in and put it on their desks. But I generally try not to write whole books unless I know someone's going to give me some money for them eventually. So I created this enormous present for myself, and I was artificially not allowing myself to actually write it. And I kind of lost it. And I knew that I wanted the guy on the cover of the ship's captain, Garland Parrish, to be of a good age, to be, you know, romantically interested in Sophie. But I knew he had probably had this really interesting youth. So what I did was I thought I would write a bunch of stories set on Stormrack with his friend Gail Felia Child. And I think of her as sort of a seafaring Doctor Who, and him as her pretty companion. So the stories are basically Doctor Who and her pretty companion sailing the seas of Stormrack. Basically what I've started doing is every time I'm going to a new island on Stormrack, I'll tend to write a short story for Gail and Garland, so that I can explore the culture of that island kind of in depth. And then when I go back to the novel, I have all this sort of rich material that I know that I can draw on and pick the best of it for the book.
That's great. That's awesome. Well, it sounds great. You know, and before we start to wind down, I actually was looking on Twitter yesterday. I follow you on Twitter, and I saw there was quite, this has nothing to do with your books now, this is totally another topic, but
okay.
Be quite a heated debate on Tony Stark versus Steve Rogers. So I would like you to, because it was the other day, I guess, and you seem to have some very strong opinions on Steve Rogers or Tony Stark. So maybe you can give us how that started, because I saw a bunch of people sort of chiming in on that.
Well, okay. First of all, we will point out that I'm completely right in this argument. My wife can hear this. She and I were walking to work in the morning, as we do, and in passing, we got on to discussing whether it's Tony or Steve who is the better person. And these are the film versions. We've just rewatched what we call the primos. So for Iron Man 1 and Captain America, the first Captain America movie. And my feeling is Tony has to work harder at being good. He just is good. Mm-hmm. And Kelly essentially argued, she's waving her finger at me. Kelly essentially argued that we give too much weight to the idea of work, right? That there's something fundamentally good about just being a good person. And we now live in an era where you don't just have this little marital discussion and go your separate ways when you get to the office. No, you drag Twitter into it. So I'm like, this is a question for Twitter. I tweeted it, and a couple of my more vocal fans kind of got in on the conversation. And it's been a very slow-mo discussion because other things have been going on. So about twice a day, one of us was like, yeah, but Steve cares less about collateral damage. Or, she argued that Tony being distractible is not the same as Tony having a fuller life than Cap. She's wrong. Close my chest and say she's wrong.
Yeah, but I'll throw it out there that, Steve had a girlfriend, and his girlfriend was in a parachuting accident, and he immediately got her hooked up with bionics as well, and that's how we got Jamie Summers. Then you've got Tony, who has a girlfriend, and she kind of got the extremist put in her, spoilers, whether she wanted it or not. So now she kind of has superpowers.
Did she keep those, though? I'm not entirely clear.
He does something to kind of suppress them, but they're still there.
Oh, wow.
And while we're on this topic, Alex, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you if you're aware of it, because I know you were talking more about the movie versions of characters, but I'm kind of guessing you may have seen that Marvel announced that in the comics, Thor is going to be a woman coming up. I don't know if you saw that or not.
That's
and what your
kind
feelings
of neat
on.
And exciting, isn't it?
Yes, I thought it was great. And I saw, I don't know if Patrick, if you saw this, there's a website that does text messages between superheroes. Have you seen this, Patrick?
No.
Oh, it's fantastic. So anyway, it was,
Thor is speaking in that sort of Shakespearean manner.
Yes, yes, it's great. And they have one with like the new female Thor and, texting Iron Man being like, but Thor is talking in that, kind of old English kind of way or whatever kind of has. And it's like, I wanted to let you know that I am now in the form of a woman. And Tony emails back or texts back. That's fine. I'll tell the rest of the team and update your contact info. And then Thor is like, you don't have a problem with this? He's like, do you still kick ass and shoot lightning? And she's like, verily. And he's like, well, that's fine. You were a frog a couple of weeks ago. So, this is no big deal. So it's great. No, it's really cool. Yeah.
I also want to throw it out there. There's speculation that we might be getting a Falcon as Captain America.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Mm-hmm. Which would be kind of cool as well. Yeah, I think that'll be the first time maybe that we've had an African American Captain America.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a done deal. I think because I saw like an art with the new Thor and Falcon as Captain America. And looks good. It looks pretty cool. But anyway,
the Avengers was the book I could never read back when I was absorbing all of the Marvel mutant titles and picking up 30 books a month. I was never interested in Tony Stark as a cartoon character. It was probably because he was an alcoholic asshole.
Mm-hmm.
I can find people like that to hang out with in real life if I want.
The
stories they've told with these characters on the screen have been so compelling that.
Mm-hmm. Great, great, good. All right. Well, unfortunately, we are now out of time. We'll have to have Alex back, and we'll see if that debate has settled at all between you and your wife.
I think we're going. We'll still be arguing about it when the next Avengers movie comes out.
Okay. Well, maybe when that. All right. So once again, Alex's book is under A.M. Delamonica, and it is Child of a Hidden Sea, and it is available everywhere, and you can get it online, and you can get it in your bookstore and all that, and you can check out those short stories that are up at tor.com, I believe, as well. But probably
they're available for free. I've got a ton of fiction up on Tor.com, like a veritable ton. And if you are in upstate New York, I'm going to be reading at Barnes & Noble in Amherst and in Rochester the week of August 9th.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you. Thanks for letting our listeners know that. Go and check that out. And once again, Alex's website is AlexDelamonica, and that's Alex with a Y, A-L-Y-X. That's AlexDelamonica.com. And you can follow her on Twitter at AlexDelamonica. For me this week, I have – oh, someone made a video for my Steampunk Girl song, did a oh, I can't think what it's called. It's like a lyric video, but they did these like really cool kinetic typography. That's what it's called. Guy did a really good job with it. He had emailed me a couple weeks ago and was like, I want to do a video for your song. Is that cool? And I'm like, yeah, go right ahead. So his name, guy named Joshua Westbury. He's in England and did a really cool job. I put it up on SF Signal as well. And so if you just YouTube Steampunk Girl, you will find it. It's a really cool video. Yeah, so that's up there. So go and check that out. And you can check out my music over at johnanilio.com and follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
Way too much stuff to talk about because we're out of time. So
okay. All right. Well, so go to atfmb.com and follow me on Twitter at atfmb. All right, everybody. We will see you next time. Have a great week.
Thanks for having me.
Circuit breakers in. We have separation, Roger. Inboard and outboards are on. We're coming forward with the side stick.
All looks good.
Roger. I've got a blowout. Damper 3.
Get your pitch to zero.
Pitch is out. I can't hold altitude.
Correction. Alpha hold is off. Trip selected. Emergency.
Flight calm. I can't hold it. She's breaking up. She's breaking.
Steve Austin. Astronaut. A man barely alive. Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Steve Austin will be that man. Better than he was before. Better. Stronger. Faster.
No one's allowed to talk, is that it? You can't talk?
No, you intimidate them.
Good God, you're a woman.
Is it better to be feared or respected? And I say, is it too much to ask for both? I humbly present the Jericho. To peace.
Tony Stark. Now you work for me.
What are you building, Stark?
Eyes are red. Your tears for your long-lost boss?
Tears of joy. I hate job hunting.
Yeah, vacation's over.
Welcome home, sir.
Put up the scanner, will you?
What happened over there?
I have my eyes open.
I want to protect the people I put in harm's way.
A man with a dozen of these can rule all of Asia.
Yeah, I can fly.
See if this dog can hunt.
So the upgrade is complete.
Tell you what, throw a little hot rod red in there.
Damn.
Good luck keeping up.
On here.
Let's face it, this is not the worst thing you've caught me doing.
There's been speculation that I'm parading around as a superhero. I'm just not the hero type.
clearly.
Say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.